Every Friday morning at this time, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger, editor and publisher of The Timber Jay. It's a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Marshall, good to talk to you today.
Well, thanks, Heidi. Glad to be here.
Well, as we were talking, you know, Governor Walz earlier this week had a message to Minnesota that was really extensive. And as you put it to me, you said the gravity of our situation here with COVID-19 had really sunk into you. So let's talk about some of the things that he said that really people need to hear at this time.
Right. Yeah, it was, it was a dramatic, really pronouncement that the governor made. You know, number one, on Wednesday, the governor announced a shelter-in-place or stay-at-home order for all Minnesotans effective at 11:59 p.m. on Friday. So basically, as of Saturday midnight, people are supposed to stay at home. And, of course, there are plenty of exceptions for that. For essential activities, people can still go out. Essential workers can still, go to work, things like that. But obviously it's going to have a big impact. He also extended the closures for restaurants and bars until May 1st, and also extended the closures on the state schools to May 4th. So this is going to have a huge impact. He acknowledged that, and he said they're trying to balance, the obvious impacts to, students, to businesses, and workers, and with the health situation that they're trying to address. And I think that was the thing that was most amazing about what he had to say. The governor said that the Department of Health has been doing some modeling based on, what they're seeing in other places. And he said they tried to adjust their modeling, for Minnesota's demographics. And number one, he said that according to the Department of Health model, they estimate that 2.4 million Minnesotans are expected to come down with the COVID-19 virus over the next several weeks. So, this is nearly half the state's population that is expected to come down with this. Now, as he pointed out, they figure about 85% of those people will experience relatively mild symptoms. This will be like the flu. So it's not fun, but, most people will, weather it at home. The problem is about 15% of the folks who come down with this will require hospitalization. And when you do the numbers here, if 2.4 million people get this, and 15% require hospitalization, that's 360,000 people requiring hospitalization in Minnesota. We don't have that kind of capacity. What was even more dramatic, however, was that about 5% of the people who come down with this, or about 120,000 Minnesotans, will require the services of an intensive care unit. And right now in Minnesota, there are 235 ICU beds. So
I had no idea that number was so low,
Yeah, I know. I was surprised at that, too.
Yeah.
Basically the message was we don't have, for the scale of this pandemic, we don't essentially have any ICU beds. They'll be gone in the first, week. And this is expected to last, for weeks. So so in the meantime, the reason that they're putting this, stay-at-home order in place, and it's only for 2 weeks, but what he said, and he said the bottom line is no matter what we do in terms of shelter in place or all that, he said, this virus, he said, is going to burn through the population. You're not going to prevent that. There's nothing we can do. Lots and lots of Minnesotans are going to get sick from this. What they're trying to do, however, is by slowing the rate at which people, come down with this disease, they're hoping then in the meantime to be able to build their infrastructure by converting arenas and sports stadiums, things like that, they're going to be converting them into mass hospitals where they will then bring in, you know, ICU beds and have them hooked up by the thousands in order to help the people who require that level of care. Because what they found is that people who need that ICU level of care, who come down with this, if they don't get it, most of them die. So, you know, and what the Department of Health is saying is that if we don't take these steps, where, and so you end up with, you'll end up with a explosion in the number of cases that'll happen much faster, and it'll outstrip our, you know, ICU capacity very quickly. And then you'll see what we've seen in places like Italy and Spain, where huge numbers of people die. And they said, you know, essentially in Minnesota, they estimate that 70,000 Minnesotans will die unless we take these steps to try to, you know, basically just give us more breathing room so we can ramp up to deal with, you know, the massive number of very, very sick people that we're likely to see in the weeks to come. And so it was a very sobering explanation that was provided by the governor. I mean, I've been paying attention to this, but I had no idea, you know, what we were looking at. So, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people listening to the governor had their, you know, jaws on the floor because this was pretty dire stuff. The other thing that was concerning was that the governor indicated that by doing this, of course, you're going to extend that period out until we reach peak infection. And they expect that with these steps that they've implemented, that the peak infection rate in Minnesota, or not the rate, but the peak infection number in Minnesota won't occur until 14 weeks from now. So that takes us well into the summer, which, you know, even though I expect that the governor will reopen most businesses in Minnesota, I suspect it's going to be a different kind of summer than what, you know, we've been used to in the past. And whether that means more people will be coming up to northern Minnesota or not, it's hard to say. But obviously there's going to be a lot of folks who are going to be affected by this. A lot of businesses are going to be affected by this. A lot of workers are going to be affected by this. So, you know, this is very significant. But we don't expect that the closures are going to last much past, you know, May, because the governor said at that point it doesn't really help. Because he said, you're not, like he said, the number of people who are infected by this, it's not going to change. He said, it's going to burn through the population. We're just trying to buy some time. But he said, beyond, you know, the month or so, by the time you get into May, you know, it won't really help to keep businesses closed beyond that, because, you know, they'll have essentially have bought enough time at that point. And then at that point, it can reopen. People can sort of go back to, you know, normal life, but, you know, there's still going to be huge numbers of infections that are going to be going on for, you know, months to come. So, I mean, this is, it's really the most uncertain time, obviously, I think, that probably any of us have experienced. You know, I mean, this is really going into uncharted waters right now.
Yeah, and that means, so you and I are going to definitely know people who come down with it, who may die. Between the two of us, one of us may get it.
Absolutely, yeah, no question about it.
Yeah, this is real. I mean, we need to know what's going on and try to, you know, squelch our own panic about it and just try to be as safe as we can. And, you know, I think with media, I'm sure you realize this too, Marshall, that people need this connection of a newspaper or the radio station at times like this, because we are isolating ourselves, as we should, but we still need that kind of connection.
No question about it. And that was one of, you know, I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, the media are deemed, you know, an essential industry. And we're been designated as essential workers, because getting that information out to people, you're right, it's absolutely key.
Yeah, did you get your pass?
I haven't gotten a pass yet.
Okay.
We're covered under that order. So.
Yeah. We ended up having to get something, like we all had to get IDs just in case like roads closed down or stuff like that.
Okay.
So, which seems a little far, it seemed really far-fetched when we did it last week and now not nearly as far-fetched.
I know. I mean, it's like we're living through a disaster movie, you know?
Yeah. We'll talk about a couple of the stories you covered this week, but how are you and Jody keeping up, and are you doing anything different to kind of keep your spirits up and stay connected to people in your life?
Of course, you know, right now, I don't mind spending time alone, so that's not a problem for me. But some of the things we're doing a lot of puzzles, jigsaw puzzles.
Yeah.
And that's been really fun. We've ordered some, and then we're sharing with friends who have puzzles, and so a lot of our friends are doing puzzles right now. And then, of course, it's been great cross skiing. So I've been out skiing, you know, almost every day. And that is another activity that even during this period of shutdown, Governor Walz said, yes, outdoor activities are going to be allowed. They're saying, you know, keep space, obviously, you know, between you and other people. But, you know, I'm skiing out in the Lost Lake Swamp. I'm not too worried about coming into contact with other people. So it's like, as far as I'm concerned, it's just fine right now.
Right. And we're making an effort to talk to John Latimer every day on the air, because I think the more we hear about nature, the more we're going to remind ourselves to get out there. And I can feel it when I'm taking multiple walks every day, how much better I feel in those moments. Mm-hmm.
No doubt. And it's always one of the most exciting times of year, too, for phenology, because you have so many things are coming back, you know, the birds especially. I mean, you know, there's new stuff at the feeder all the time. So, you know, it is an interesting time of year, and to be outdoors, and that's certainly allowed. Don't just keep yourself cooped up at home.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk about a couple of the big stories from the week in the Timber Jay as well. A transfer of ownership from a synagogue.
Yeah, it's the B'nai Abraham Synagogue in Virginia, and it was actually started in 1910, and it served what was then a fairly substantial Jewish population living in Virginia. And over the years, that population, you know, either died off or moved away. There's really the synagogue kind of fell into disuse. But then in recent years, because it was the folks who were still had a tie to that, basically, you know, family who remember going there, you know, who in many cases don't even live in Virginia anymore, but they still had this connection to the synagogue. And so there was an effort to restore it. And they do have it restored now. So it's in much better condition. It's got beautiful stained glass. And you know, it should be in good shape to last quite a while now. But the folks who were involved in the renovation, they weren't in a position to, you know, really do anything with the building because they don't live in the area. And so they wanted to transfer it to another organization that would have useful purpose for this building. And so they've transferred the ownership to the Northern Lights Music Festival, which, of course, is, you know, run by Vita Zupancic, and she's their artistic director. And so now they plan to use the facility for community gatherings and also for a performance space. And they've used it for smaller performances with the Northern Lights Music Festival in the past. So now those will be able to continue there. I would imagine they'll probably be able to store some things there as well. So having their own facility, I'm sure, will be very helpful to the festival. It was a good story. And it's nice to see a 100-year-old, actually 110-year-old synagogue now that will be, you know, certainly available and continue to be used for the foreseeable future. And I should mention, too, it is on the Register of the National Register of Historic Places.
Okay, sounds great. Well, before we go, what's new in the world of Polymet and the courts?
Yeah, I tell you, it just seems like every week there's something new on that. And it turns out the Court of Appeals on Monday issued a ruling which essentially rejected the air permit that was issued back in 2018 by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. That permit had been challenged by a coalition of environmental organizations and the Fond du Lac Band. And basically, the argument that the environmental groups had made was that that PolyMet, they said, actually intends to build a much larger operation than it had originally proposed. And they said essentially that the permit issued was a sham. And, you know, they indicated information from a financial report that PolyMet had put out in 2018, which indicated that the 32,000 ton per day project that the company has proposed was not financially viable. I mean, it was profitable, but at such a low level that they didn't believe the company would pursue it. And in that same report, PolyMet had indicated that they had also looked at larger operations, including doubling that rate to 59,000 tons a day, and they also looked at a 118,000 ton per day scenario, and they said those would yield higher returns on investment. So the environmental critics of the mine argued that that's what they believe PolyMet intends to do, rather than and so they said this permit would actually not suffice for that larger operation. So the court in this case agreed, and at this point they've said it has to go back to the MPCA for further work, and then at some point the MPCA might be able to then issue a new permit that might be more acceptable to the courts.
Marshall, thanks so much for filling us in. We will check in with you next week. Stay safe.
All right, you too. Take care.
Thanks. It's Marshall Helmberger. That's been the Border News Roundup on KEXE, KBXE. Keep connected with us. Email comments at kexe.org.